From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
What do you want to talk about when we tape our next podcast segment? I asked Ken Drews the other day, and his answer was succinct. Monocots, he said, to which I said, what? I want to talk about monocotyledons, he said, using the unabbreviated name of one of the two groups that all flowering plants fit into, the other being dicots. And so we will. And yes, it's geeky, but also a lot more revealing than you'd imagine. And also a hint that seemingly esoteric facts like the taxonomic relationships between plants can make for fun themes for a plant collection or even a concept for a bed or border or display of grouped containers. More in a moment, but first this message.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
Ken Drews is an old friend and a garden writer with 20 books to his credit, and most recently one about fragrance called The Sensual Garden and another called The New Shade Garden. He made a visit the other day to Wave Hill, the renowned public garden in New York City, where they have a whole monocot border that was in its glory, and hence our topic today, plants that are monocots and why to care. Hello, Ken, with the crazy ideas for segments.
Oh, Margaret, you sent me, talk about a rabbit hole. I said monocot, and now I know a whole lot about, a little more about monocots than I would like to have known, except the monocot border at Wave Hill is spectacular. And I'm sure that most people who see this arrangement of plants, which is, we'll try to describe, don't realize that they have something in common and that they're all monocots. But most people don't even know, not that I'm putting people down, it's just that, you know, who teaches biology now anymore? But there's, well, should I start talking about this?
Yeah. But first, I have a question about what's going on in the garden, just to know, because I haven't talked to you in a bit. Are you still warm and no frost and no nothing down there in New Jersey?
No frost, and yeah, the color has begun. Oh. And it's funny because Indigenous Peoples Day this year is early, because mm-hmm. usually Indigenous Peoples Day is our peak of color, but it's usually later in the month. Oh, so yeah. I imagine in a week, the maples will have turned. They're just beginning, the maples. The liquid dambars, you know, I've got quite a few of those. They're bright green. They haven't turned at all.
Yeah, and up here north of zone or so, similarly. And a lot of the maples, the old maples especially in my area, a lot of them are just falling kind of crispy and tan colored, like paper bag colored, unpleasant weather, the lots of rain and fungal diseases and stuff like that. So I'm not sure what's going to go on. But anyway, I just wanted to know. I just needed a perspective.
I found in the past that the drought years have the most color. That's, of course, an anecdotal generalization.
And it's supposed to be, I think, the opposite, but whatever.
Really?
Oh, I think, well, I think you need good water, but I think, I don't know.
Maybe it's both.
Yeah. So Wave Hill and monocot. So you went on a visit, you saw the monocot border, and like you said, most people think, oh, look at that beautiful arrangement of, and those are all kind of tender plants. A lot of them are in pots.
I think they're planted in the ground mostly, uh-huh. mostly. Uh-huh. But to start, what's a monocot?
You know,
I mean, so there's lots of different kinds of plants. There's the conifers and things like that, which are gymnosperms. But the flowering plants are angiosperms, and there are two kinds. There are monocots and there are dicots.
Right.
And what makes a monocot? Well, the seed has one part, and a dicot has two parts or two cotyledons. You think of a peanut, you know, when you have a roasted peanut or a bean, if you soak a bean, you know, a peanut splits and there's two parts. That's a dicot.
Right.
And when these seeds germinate, not the roasted peanut, but when the raw seed germinates, the monocot sends up a single leaf, which is like a blade, and the dicot sends up what are called two seed leaves. And it's sort of like, I don't know, angel wings. You know, it's symmetrical and there are two parts.
Right.
And it doesn't really matter to us. It just happens to be that way. And when they become adults, most monocots have parallel veins, and dicots sort of have branched veins. And the monocots often have three-part or divisions of three parts in their petals. I mean, really, we're getting super esoteric here. Also, the fruits often have three parts. You know, I know I've told you this before, but one of my favorite parlor tricks, which I almost never perform, is you can take a banana, and you can, which is a monocot, and you can peel down the banana, and you can stick your impeccably clean finger in the middle of the top of the banana and push it down, and the banana will split into three parts. And if you are with two friends, they will applaud.
Okay.
And you can share it. But it's just an example of a monocot.
Right. So let's just go back to like the seed part. So named because cotyledons, the cot part, cotyledons are seed leaves. So most monocots, sometimes you don't really see the seed leaves on when a seed sprouts, begins to sprout. I mean, it's not always the telltale thing, but monocotyledons have the one seed leaf that comes up theoretically. You know, when you're doing your seed starting, you might sort of clue into this visually. And dicots have the two, like you talked about the beans or whatever, right? You talked about those other things. So corn would be monocot, is that right? If we saw
If you think about it, the major food crops in the world, rice and beans and wheat, they're all monocots.
All the grains and grasses and so forth. Right. So that was that's one moment in our gardener life where we might see. And again, these are the two big groups of angiosperms of flowering plants. So meaning like ferns and conifers, not included in this division of monocots and dicots. So that's one moment when we might notice it. And for me, the only other time I really think about it is if I'm trying to key out a plant, like if I don't know what something is, like a weed or something. If you go to one of the online kind of, you know, tools to figure out what a plant is, it asks you, you know, it takes you through questions like, is it broadleafed or is it, you know, whatever? Is it, you know, it asks you questions like to eliminate and narrow your choices. And it often asks about one or more of the things that you just said, like it asks you if the leaves have parallel veins or if they have like branched veins. And so when we say that, like let's visualize a little bit, like the leaf of a
iris.
An iris is a good one, a bearded iris leaf versus leaf of a begonia or a geranium, right? Mm-hmm. So monocot, the iris, dicot, with the multi-branched sort of not parallel.
Maples,
dicots, right? Okay. Mm-hmm. So it helps you sometimes if you're looking to ID a plant, it sort of cuts it in half, not literally half. I think there's like almost 55 or 60,000 species of monocots. Isn't that right? In the world, something like that.
Oh, yeah. Did you want me to know them all right now?
Yes. And we're going to have an alphabetical quiz in a minute. But in other words, so it doesn't get you down to the narrowest, but it does cut it down a lot from all the flowering plants in the world to a portion. Okay, so the leaves may look different, not just the seed leaves, but when the plant is older, and even the roots can be different. I understand the monocots and the dicots. Like monocots, I think have more inclined to have fibrous roots, and dicots can have more tap. You know, kind of the roots coming from one central place. And I mean, it's really interesting and kooky. But it's a really cool way also to sort of make a collection like they did at Wave Hill and be teaching while also beautifying the part of the garden.
It's funny. I wanted to know how the monocot border at Wave Hill came about. And they had teaching gardens. They had a monocot border, and they had another one that was vines. And, you know, I don't exactly know what the different ones were, but the monocot border became so popular that they decided to keep it.
Right.
And they don't have the other teaching gardens, but the monocot border, because it's so incredibly ornamental, and it's mostly, as you said, tender plants. So it's really a seasonal garden. But I think what's the stars of that garden are bananas. And I mean, there are some cannas and stuff,
right?
But also the alocasias and the colocasias, which are, I guess, they're aroids.
So the elephant ears.
Right.
Right. Are there grasses as well? Because grass is being monoculture. Are there like ornamentally kind of grasses and so forth?
Well, there's ornamental grasses that are tender because we're talking about plants that are either tropical or subtropical. And there's gingers. I mean, real gingers.
Oh,
like the creeping American ginger that just smells like ginger. I don't want to get too esoteric here. But a lot of the grasses that are there are permanent. They're hardy. But not all of them.
Mm-hmm.
And also palms. And there aren't a lot of palms in the border, although one of my favorite plants in the world, which I've only killed once because it's so hard. Oh, I can't remember its Latin name.
Yeah.
You know, if you look at palms, they have fronds and, you know, different leaflets. But when they start to come out, those leaflets aren't split. They come out as one thing and then they split because they have evolved to tolerate wind. So they split into these different parts. So it's got this big leaf that is, it doesn't split. It's just incredible. And talk about parallel veins. You can really see what a monocot is when you see this palm whose name I can't remember.
So daffodils, onions.
All the lilies.
Also the whole lily, not just true
asparagus.
Lilies. But not just true lilies, but all the in the lily family. So that whole family, again, the grasses, the whole family grasses, which includes the grains, you know, like rice, wheat, and corn. The orchid family, the whole orchid family.
All orchids. Right. And I once read that one out of every seven species in the world is an orchid, which is probably true. It doesn't mean one out of every plant, but one out of every species.
Right.
A lot of orchids. Okay, now I remember it's Licuella.
So the lily family, the palms family, the palm family, the irises, you know, again, the grasses, you know, all Elveniers. These are monocots, right?
Right.
When you brought this up, it sort of took me back to both a million years ago when I wanted to transition my journalism from what I was doing before to garden writing, my hobby. And I took some courses at New York Botanical Garden, and we learned things like this. And again, it helped us to understand the order of things out there and the relationships and so forth, and to identify plants and so forth. But then also later I went traveling to England a number of times. And what I found most fascinating, and it's not the same thing as like the monocot border dividing by these two big groups of flowering plants, but I loved it, like Cambridge and Kew and Oxford, the botanical gardens with great history and so forth. They had a tradition of having these taxonomic beds, these what they used to call the order beds, because they were, you know, the taxonomic order was reflected. And related plants were grouped together, but they were beautiful. It wasn't just like, you know, like a farm field with everything in order, you know, in rows. They were beautiful. And so it was a conceit, just like the monocot border at Wave Hill. It was a conceit for designing or for creating, amassing a collection. And you like to collect things, I mean, right? So are you going to collect some monocots now? Or maybe you already have a collection unknowingly of monocots.
Unknowingly is right. But, you know, well, I'm always thinking of things like that because it's so hard sometimes, especially after you've shopped, to know what to do with the plants. So maybe having if you love hydrangeas, maybe you want to have a collection of hydrangeas, and that's plants all in the same genus. You know, there's lots of different kinds of. Well, I know the Brooklyn Botanic Garden used to have what they called the systematic.
And that's planting. The other name for taxonomic or order beds.
Right.
Yes, systematic beds. Right. Good.
Right.
Good.
And and they're also there can be plant. I don't know what they're called when they're morphological. There's some that. You know, like you said, the vines. So plants that have the similar characteristics.
Right, even like if they're not related, right.
Right, right.
Right. Right. Wave Hill used to have, besides, and maybe they still do, they had one that was the whole aster or daisy composite family. They had a whole bed, a garden of just composites, I believe, years ago.
I was thinking about that because, you know, asters and artichokes, they don't seem related, but those are both in the Asteraceae family.
Right,
the composite, the daisy family.
Right. So it's kind of a fun, you know, as we're taking our gardens apart this fall and as we're thinking about what worked and what didn't, and, you know, the hardest part, as you were just referring to, is sometimes like, okay, I got all these plants, but what do I, you know, how do I make them, you know, the biggest impact and visually pleasing and so forth. And sometimes, you know, following, like if we're flummoxed, sometimes following something like this, which was originally more for a teaching purpose, like at the Wave Hill example, or the ones that I was speaking about, or Brooklyn Botanic, you know, it was to be not just beautiful, but to also instruct people about the plant world. But even if we're not trying to teach in our gardens, it informs us and it gives us a hook. Do you know what I mean? And takes us off the hook of like, oh, I don't know where to put anything. You know, it's kind of fun.
Well, I always say every plant has a story, and boy, it's so true. And
right.
In the monocot border, it's the bananas that drive me wild.
Yeah, you have a thing for bananas. You love those bananas.
I think everybody does when they see these giant pads.
They are crazy looking
paddles.
Plants. Yeah.
They're like canoe paddles or something sticking up, and now there's colors. There's the green ones with the red streaks, and there's hardy Musa baju, which you probably can't grow, but Zone 7 at Wave Hill, they can grow that outdoors.
Wow.
That's the hardy fiber bamboo. And they do. That's one of the biggest ones.
Banana.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Bamboo, banana.
You say banana, I say banana. Okay.
All right.
Sorry about that.
Yeah, Musa, the bamboo. Now you've got me saying bamboo.
And now I'm going to say palm. I don't even mean that.
I know.
Banana.
Banana.
There's sort of two genera that are the bananas. The Musas. And the ansetes,
right
there. I've got that out. But, you know, I'm talking and thinking at the same time, which is hard.
Dangerous, dangerous,
dangerous. Because I can't stop thinking about the Cavendish banana, which is the banana that we buy at the store. And I was reading today, 100 billion bananas were consumed last year. Can you imagine?
That's a lot of bananas. Yes,
it's the most popular fruit in the United States, but I mean around the world. But someday when we have time, we could talk about how the Cavendish got its name.
But what I love about, again, about your idea, or, you know, talking about this geeky thing, is that, you know, I can design a garden as, oh, I'm going to make a blue garden or a white garden or a red garden. You know what I mean? But you know what? That's hard to get right. It's I'm sorry. I don't mean to sound, you know,
no,
like I can't.
I'm into this.
But when it has this intellectual layer, when it has this layer of teaching, informing, learning, it gives us a guiding principle to collect plants, love those plants, assemble those plants, have fun with those plants. And I love it. I know I've said that now 10 times, but that was what sort of intrigued me about your suggestion. You know, is that it gives us this other avenue. And I'm always fascinated. Well, you've mentioned aroids. You mentioned some of the aroids like that you have, like the elephant ears, the colocasia alocasias and so forth. And, you know, and I'm always fascinated when I'm tucking my plants away at the end of the season to sort of, you know, as I unearth sort of tender bulbs out of the pots and put them in paper bags, put in the cellar and things like that, you know, and I think, ooh, look at you. And you're a little bit like this guy over here. And you know what? You're probably really related in some crazy way. You know, I'm fascinated, not that you can just infer from looking at things, but I love thinking about the relationships between all my little charges, you know, all my little friends, my plant friends.
Well, it's fun to learn, especially when things are so esoteric, or I could use the word sexy. I know there's a plant you like that I don't.
Uh-oh. Only one?
Well, there's one that I is a monocot.
Which is
and
that?
And it's an aroid. Well, I call it the voodoo lily or the vampire.
Oh, yeah. So it's either Sauromatum or Amorphophallus, yes, or two genera of voodoo lilies.
Or the dracunculus.
Yeah, I don't have that, but I have a lot of Amorphophallus and a lot of
Sauromatum. One is too many.
Oh, I love them. I just love them. They're
insane. Well, they have incredible leaves. And the Amorphophallus, I think, has the biggest single leaf of any plant. It's one leaf.
Crazy. They're crazy.
However, something happens, but you don't seem to mind. With the Amorphophallus, it always happens to me in January. I have to give the plant its own room for a week.
Yes, they stink. And because they're pollinated by, I don't know, blowflies and other kinds of flies, and who like rotting meat, you know, who like that's what they're attracted to, that sort of smell of dead stuff. But I love them. And it is funny when I go down in the cellar where they are stored, sometimes someone will have woken up in like you say, like February or something. And it's like, oops, somebody died in the basement. And, you know, you think it's a dead mouse for a minute. And then you're like, oops, nope. One of those guys is blooming.
You think it's a dead cow.
Yeah, I guess you're dead right. It's bigger than a mouse. Yeah. But I love the foliage. And you know what? You could always just cut off the flowers. So I love the foliage, and I'll have to show a picture with the transcript of the show over on awaytogarden.com.
You know, cut off the flower? No way. I mean, as much as I'm complaining, as long as you give it its own room so you can sample it at will.
Right, in the
basement, like you said.
Right. So beyond monocot, so let's just wind down the last few minutes. I mean, are you kind of getting ready? I know you had the flood, and we talked about that on the last time you were on the show. You know, and you had to do a cleanup after that, of course. So what are you getting ready, sort of waiting? I feel like I'm in the limbo time before cleanup begins. Well, are you getting ready?
I'm putting stuff away getting ready to.
Right.
So I'm getting the sunroom together ready, because the plants that don't go completely to sleep go into the sunroom,
right,
which has lots of windows. And some of those plants we've been talking about go into a cool, pretty much dark spot, and they sleep through the winter, like that Musella that I really like, and the Muses and the Ansetes. Some of them get cut back if they're too tall,
right,
and they get put in a room that's it. It's really around 50 degrees. I was thinking about that. It can get colder, but they want it about 50. Mm-hmm. And the most important thing is to keep them almost bone dry. I do just like sprinkle them a little bit, because they'll rot if they're moist. Right. But they're very easy. I mean, what could be easier than having plants sleep through the winter?
Right.
That's pretty cool.
Right. And I mean, a lot of the things that I have lots of, like cannas and so forth, and euchomas, the pineapple lilies, you know, I wait until they go to sleep on their own outside. They get frosted. And then I, you know, take up the bulbs and store them and so forth. But, you know, I was thinking about, just as a last thought for people, if they are beginning, you know, maybe they're a little cooler than we are or whatever, and they are beginning their cleanup. I thought of I went back to look at some advice from Doug Tallamy, you know, University of Delaware and great garden author and so forth, the ecologist and entomologist. And you know, we've been talking so much about leave the leaves, like don't clean up too strenuously, don't be too crazy with the sort of rest of the garden cleanup, not the tender things we were just talking about. And I found this, you know, kind of quote that I just wanted to like leave us with, leave the leaves, which is, you know, about how important it is not to clean up too strenuously, how not to be too tidy, to be a little messy, and to encourage leaf litter, areas of natural leaf litter around the property to support all those little creatures who overwinter. And he said this great thing to me not long ago, and I wrote it down. He said, "I like to think of leaves the same way we think of water these days. The practice is to keep all the water that falls on your property. Don't let it run off. Same thing with the leaves." So I thought that was kind of a good guidance for the leaves mantra for this fall as we get ready for leaf drop and cleanup, you know?
You remind me of something barely related, but when somebody asked me, how could I like tropical plants when I'm so into native plants? And I could think of nothing better to like than plants in pots.
Right.
If you're into native plants.
Exactly. Exactly. So those are our two last thoughts. Ken, thank you for a fun, geeky, as I said, thing to talk about, monocots, which led us to some other discussions. And I hope I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Margaret.
Underwriting support by Color Blends Wholesale Flower Bulbs, supplying landscape professionals and ambitious residential gardeners with new ideas and high-quality flower bulbs for fall planting. Plant tulips, plant daffodils, plant Color Blends this fall. Available at colorblends.com.
And I hope I'll talk to all the rest of you again soon, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version of the show on Apple Podcasts or Stitcher or Spotify, and you can find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and on Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening and fall cleanup meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.